This is going to be a hands-on sermon, a participatory sermon in the truest sense. May we have our earth, please. As our journey proceeds, this beach ball in the form and colors of the earth will be passed along, starting from the back all the way across each row, if possible, moving its way toward the front, from hand to hand, spanning the aisles all the way across. When a row is completed, pass it on to the next row, and then across again, without dropping it, without tossing it, without a word. Just look at it and be astonished by the beauty and complexity of our living planet. By the time this sermon concludes, our Earth will have been held by well over 1,000 people. Like the passing of an Olympic torch, this common experience will help bind us together as one. We begin with a Hasidic story about a rabbi who spent much of his time pondering the mysteries of the universe. One day he was walking across the town square when a Cossack, the town policeman, accosted him. The Cossack, in one of those Cossack-like angry moods, said, "Where are you going?" "I don't know," the rabbi replied. Now this answer infuriated the policeman. "Every morning at 7 o'clock," he said, "for the past 20 years you have crossed this square on the way to the synagogue to pray. Here it is 7 o'clock, you're headed in the direction of the synagogue, and you tell me you don't know where you're going? You're trying to make a fool out of me, that's what you're trying to do, and I'll show you a thing or two about that." So he took the rabbi and carted him off to the local jail. And the Cossack was about to turn the key of the jailhouse when the rabbi said, "You see, you just don't know." That's a lesson we learned here last night. We never know what's going to happen. This morning I heard that the city of Stamford passed an ordinance. It's no longer legal in this city to shout Kol Nidre in a crowded theater. I think last night was very appropriate. It's a great way to end up the year that was. So much has changed, so much unexpected has happened, that we can hardly recognize the world we live in, much less speculate about where we'll be next Yom Kippur. We thank God for the little things that don't change, like the way the PLO never misses an opportunity to miss an opportunity, and having no state income tax in Connecticut. Sorry. Earlier this year, I noticed that you can't even use old standard phrases like "it's secure as money in the bank," especially if your bank is CBT, or was. And how about the old evil empire? The Soviet Empire has gone the way of all the evil empires, from Babylonia to Rome to the Yankees. The only constant that we can find in this world of ours is change. Many changes have been most positive, others incredibly painful. But all change leaves us confused, groping, feeling alone, and traumatic change all the more so. Where are we going? Our community has seen more economic suffering over the past 12 months than at any time since the Great Depression. We know all the gloomy statistics. Business failures up 93% in New England. bank failures, unemployment, real estate debacles. The recession has affected all of us. Some have lost millions, others have lost meals. It's torn families apart. It's been a marked increase in child abuse cases. It's forced families back together. Many adults in their 20s and 30s are going back home, nowhere else to go. Social agencies are strapped, powerless to do anything. The standard escapes from all this misery, drugs, alcohol, and family abandonment are now joined by the latest fad, committing suicide, based on a runaway bestseller on how to do it. I look out this morning and I see hundreds of people who are very worried, feeling very alone and disconnected, unlucky and unloved. Well, you think you have it bad. Think of this construction worker in Tel Aviv. Not only was his home totally demolished by a Scud missile, but when he went back to sift through the debris, he discovered some love letters someone had been writing to his wife. The author Robert Bly calls it the road of ashes, descent, and grief. It is a path we all must take at least once in our lives. It is a descent many have made this year. Where's our earth back there? Hold it up for a second. Hold up our earth. Now turn it upside down. So many lives were turned upside down in 57, 51. All right, keep it going. Where are we going? On the upside, the world has never been so united as it is today. United behind an idea more powerful than tanks, more enduring than all the evil empires put together. It is the idea that we are created in the image of God, B'Tselem Elohim, as it says in Genesis, and that we all have the inalienable right to be free. Where are we going? At times of great historic tumult, the Jew has always intensified his search for God, for meaning, and for hope. Now, this search often leads to messianic speculations, which are invariably dangerous. I don't want to get into those today. Help us all along our path of our search for God. In times like these, the religious quest is not merely a matter of satisfying intellectual curiosity. It becomes a matter of great urgency. We need direction. We need meaning. We need God. Today we'll see where God might be found. In our earth, in outer space, and inside our souls. In our prayers and in our deeds, and in one contemporary song. We'll go far beyond the old image of God as Father and King, Avinu Malkeinu, because our spiritual crisis, this ache that we feel within, requires much more than outmoded metaphors from the era of kings and castles. And so our search begins. First, we've got to get away from the craziness of here and now. What we've got to do is look at it all from a new perspective, an angle from which meaning and purpose might be more easily grasped. We need to lift ourselves up from the ashes of this unredeemed world where illusion rules, illusion of shattered, divided lives. We've got to lift ourselves up to the highest mountaintop and even higher. La'ela ula'ela, look down on creation as it really is, from a distance. From a distance. No doubt many of you have heard this beautiful song, this beautiful Jewish song, written by Julie Gold, a Jew, sung by Bette Midler. This year's Grammy winner expresses so clearly that most ancient of Jewish hopes, for unity and harmony, the vision that grows in every Jewish heart from the time he learns the Shema. From a distance, it all makes sense. All of creation is in harmony. All of the earth is filled with a beauty so sublime, with blues and greens and snow-capped mountains white. From a distance, there is a startling symmetry to all of life, one that can reduce the most skeptical modern scientist to a child filled with amazement. Let's hold up our earth again for a moment back there and spin it around. If you play basketball on one finger, otherwise just spin it. Wonderful. From a distance, says the song, there is harmony, and it echoes through the land. And so there is. Striking example of this harmony occurred for me the way this past year began and ended. Two strikingly similar visions, each of a living, breathing mass of indescribable awe and power. One witnessed on the eve of Rosh Hashanah last year was the echoing ultrasound image of my as yet unborn son, Ethan, 5 months in the womb. A living, breathing network of darkened circles, all surrounding a static black hole, which the technician told me was the eye. And then just last month, another striking, awe-inspiring image. As we looked at the earth from a distance, what did we see? The image of swirling clouds taken from a satellite. We all saw it. And this time the swirls were better defined. This time the eye was even clearer to see. And this time its name was Bob. In here, out there. The human child, the hurricane, microcosm, macrocosm, and they are mirror images. Each one breathes, each one exists only through the most extraordinary confluence of natural forces. Each is born of warm water, each is loud and demanding, each drinks voraciously and then spits most of it out. And each one lives out its lifespan, short but heroic, makes its mark on the world, and then moves on. The beautiful intricacy of the human organism is matched only by the equivalent beauty of the organism we inhabit, the system known as Earth. That's why we say on these high holidays, Hayom Harat Olam, today the world is conceived. Not created, it's not a thing, but a living being, in here, out there. Now the concern for our environment is a very Jewish concept, based on a law in the book of Deuteronomy forbidding the unnecessary destruction of trees. But this supreme respect for the world we inhabit goes far beyond carpooling and recycling. We care because nature isn't merely important, it's holy. It's not just there for us to use, but it is part of us, and we are part of it. As we breathe in and out, we exchange molecules with our environment the way school children exchange baseball cards. The breath of the universe flows through us. The Christian theologian Sally McFay goes as far as to suggest that the world is God's body. This image is a far cry from Avinu Malkeinu, but it's also found in our Jewish tradition, our mystical, Kabbalistic tradition. Let's think for a moment about the profound implications of this idea. We are part of what makes the earth breathe. We are part of God. The earth isn't the setting for the human adventure. It's the earth's adventure that we are participating in. As extras, each of us only for a moment of that drama, a fleeting speck on its landscape, while the earth spins and dips its way through eons for a purpose that no mere human can discern. From a distance, there is harmony, and it echoes through the land. In Hebrew, man is Adam, the earth is Adama. We and our earth are one. At your seats is a reading in the shape of the earth. I came across it at an ecumenical Earth Day observance I attended this year. You know, it's a shame Jewish groups tend to be so focused on our other problems that we often ignore ecological matters. This isn't to minimize loan guarantees or pogroms in Brooklyn. But these concerns about the earth are not only so inherently Jewish, but they're also concerns that our faith shares with so many others. When you see God in all of creation, you also see God in all other human beings. From a distance, it is the underlying unity that we perceive, not the endless struggle of species against species, race against race, religion against religion. Let's read together. If the earth were only a few feet in diameter, floating a few feet above a field somewhere, people would come from everywhere to marvel at it. People would walk around it, marveling at its big pools of water, its little pools, and the water flowing between the pools. People would marvel at the bumps on it and the holes in it, and they would marvel at the very thin layer of gas surrounding it and the water suspended in the gas. The people would marvel at all the creatures walking around the surface of the ball, at the creatures in the water. People would declare it precious because it was the only one, and they would protect it so that it would not be hurt. The ball would be the greatest wonder known. People would come to behold it, to be healed, to gain knowledge, to know beauty, and to wonder how it could be. People would love it and defend it with their lives because they would somehow know that their lives, their own roundness, could be nothing without it, if the earth were only a few feet in diameter. Let's hold up our earth again out there and look at our earth only a few feet in diameter. We can see God somewhat in that earth and in our participation in the life of that earth, but from a distance you can see it even better. A few years ago, a book was released written by astronauts and cosmonauts, people who had been to outer space. And it was a collection of their visions on the Earth from a distance. One Soviet cosmonaut said, "It isn't important in which sea you observe a slick of pollution, or in the forests of which country a fire breaks out. You are standing guard over the whole of Earth." How ironic that just this week, from 360 miles out, astronauts on the Space Shuttle Discovery commented that they could see the burning oil wells of Kuwait. Another cosmonaut, Alexander Alexandrov, said, "One morning I woke up and decided to look out the window to see where we were. We were flying over America, and suddenly I saw snow. I've never visited America, but I imagined that the arrival of autumn and winter is the same there as in other places, and the process of getting ready for them is the same there as in other places. And it struck me that it doesn't matter what country you look at, we are all children of the same earth." Finally, the words of Sultan bin Sulman Al Saud, an astronaut from Saudi Arabia. "The first day or so we pointed to our countries. The third or fourth day we were pointing to our continents. By the fifth day we were aware of only one earth." One earth. Let's hold up our one earth out there one more time. And for the benefit of the people here in the front, two Earths. how I wish that we could all get a single glimpse of what these astronauts and cosmonauts have seen of our fragile, sacred ball of life. How I wish it, for if we could, there would be no more fear, no more hatred, and no more war. This is for the choir for later. From a distance, the song goes, you look like my friend, even though we are at war. From a distance, war is incomprehensible. From a distance, we can't see the opponent's drawn sword. We can only see that he looks like us. Where is God then? God is in this harmony, this unity, this vision of one earth. God, for lack of a better name, is its source, and so are we. We've looked for God in outer space. Now let's search for a moment within. Shema Yisrael. Listen, Israel, the Eternal is our God. The Eternal is one, we all know it. The focal prayer of our religion, recited twice daily. We recite it again at the end of Yom Kippur. But a Kabbalist would say that this is not, in fact, an affirmation of faith, a statement. It is instead a wish. God is not totally one at the moment. A Kabbalist would say, a Jewish mystic would say, this is a call to action. We must make God one. How? How do we create this harmony in ourselves and in the world? Two ways, two Jewish responses. One, through prayer. Aryeh Kaplan, a modern Jewish mystic, explains that the word Shema begins with the letters Shin and Mem, the same letters that spell shame, name. Now, when we give something a name, it becomes familiar, less threatening, more harmonious. A name helps us to forge order out of chaos. And Shin is the letter of chaos. Let's just sound it out for a moment. Shh, let's hear it. Participatory sermon. Shh. A little bluff. 2,000 people? Shh. Now it sounds better. More, shh, keep going. Like interference on the airwaves. Sounds. Now it sounds like Hebrew school. Good, keep going. Too much noise. Shin, the letter of chaos. The letter Shin even looks chaotic if you look at it in the Hebrew alphabet, like a centipede on its back, kicking its legs, or a battery of Patriot missiles. Ah, but the Mem, the second letter of the Shema, that's the letter of harmony. And of course, is it sound? Let's hear it. Keep going. We're beginning to sound like an old-fashioned shtiebel now. In Tibet. Okay. The shape of the Mem is also nearly complete, but it has a little opening on the bottom, lower left-hand corner, except for the final Mem, the complete Mem, which is utterly whole and harmonious. So now, when we say the Shema, we harness our inner energies to turn chaos into harmony, to go from Shin to Mem. Like the word for harmony itself, it's amazing, the word Shalom, Shin to Mem, as we try to recapture control of our lives when we pray. And what is your Shin today? What throws you into disarray? Is it inexplicable anger toward your spouse? Is it the fear of death? Is it a disease? Is it loneliness? We have the godlike power to transform our Shin to a Mem, the Shema tells us. And in doing so, we can make God one and his name one, Ushmo Echad, within us. Now, you've just learned the first basic lesson in Jewish meditation. It's the essence of all of Jewish prayer. And the Shema is recited every morning, just after waking up to the terrors of Bryant Gumbel telling us that the sky is falling. And every evening, when Dan Rather is there to confirm that it did indeed fall. Brings us from chaos to order, from Shin to Mem, and there's one more letter in the word Shema, the silent ayin. Shema means listen, be silent, and attentive. Don't try to zip through every letter of the prayer book, and we've got a lot of letters today. Stay with the Shema as long as you have to, as long as it takes to seize control of all the battling forces of chaos in your lives, to sense the beauty, the wonder, and ultimately the unity of it all. Now, what makes Jewish mysticism different from so-called New Age is that we recognize that there's another answer too. Not just in the meditation. There is another way to make God one. And that is through action, not just prayer. I refer to the Kabbalistic idea of tikkun, of repairing the world. And the world has seen its share of tikkun, of repair this year. We look around and see more true hope for peace among nations than the world has ever known. We see hearts turned toward deeds of compassion. We see that greed is out and sharing is in. From a distance, the song goes, we all have enough and no one is in need. Now, the Kabbalists love to play games with numbers. Each Hebrew letter is assigned a numerical value. By exploring the relationships between words, they find inner harmonies, inner meanings. Lo and behold, when we look at the last word of the first line of the Shema, the word Echad, one, the letters add up to 13. And there's another word whose letters add up to 13, and it's the next word of the Shema, the word V'ahavta, Ahava, love. You shall love. It's love that is able to break down barriers and unify opposites. When we see the image of God not just whole in ourselves, but in another person, we see how similar we are. That is where love begins. When we love our neighbor as ourselves, we also sense the presence of God in that relationship. When we see a tree or a dog or a hurricane, and we see our dance of life mirrored in its dance, there too, we see God. The dance of life, dizzying and beautiful. The poet and essayist Martha Heinemann has written of the feeling that she had in the hospital after giving birth. That feeling of connection with all the living creatures on earth, a new, intensified love.
When I ate my toast, I saw fields of wheat, felt the heat of the sun, the ache in the muscles of the farmer laboring to reap the wheat, and all the other human beings whose work had been involved in the transformation. The miller, the truck driver, the baker, the bakery clerk, the aide that carried my tray. As I drank my glass of milk, I felt the invisible presence of the cow beside me like a sister. And as I ate my egg, felt the warm feathers underneath the hen. The magnanimity of all these people and creatures who had suffered, however unconsciously, to provide me with this food, for which I, this once, felt deep gratitude, overwhelmed me, and I wept as I ate. For I knew that this breakfast would not just end in satisfaction, but would be transformed into milk feed another.
We Jews have a way of putting all of these thoughts into a very short sentence. It's called the motzi. Connectedness to all of creation is the underlying concept of every blessing, every bracha. And underlying all of that is love. And underlying all of that is God. And while I couldn't share in that experience of producing milk for my little hurricane this year, through loving him, I've seen and experienced more of God in these last 7 months than I ever could have imagined. He's had a slight cold these past few days, but not even stuffed nostrils have caused him to waver from being the most cheerful, playful, and unfazed creature I know. He's taught me a lot about not being fazed, about how to give and receive love. If this kid's like a hurricane, he's all eye and no storm. As long as we have the capacity to feed and to be fed, to tap into this stream of life on earth, we are not alone. As long as we are alive, we can reach out and transcend the pain and the trauma of financial loss and earth-shaking change. The idea is to be open to that flow of life, to give and to receive, to allow life and divinity to flow through us. And it begins with love, pure, unsolicited, unconditional. Look at what Israel did. Incredible. You know how they suffered this year, 39 Scud missiles, you know about that. 2 months of sheer terror, the likes of which we cannot imagine because we weren't there. And what do they do after the last missile is fired? These Meshuganas are sending blankets, powdered milk, and toys to Iraq. Thirsty Iraqi children drinking bottled water bearing Israeli labels. Pure love. It's a lesson that Mia Farrow learned in Woody Allen's movie this year, Alice. The perfect movie for this year of global harmony. The only way to overcome a feeling that you are unloved is to love back all the more. If you feel life has been unfair to you this year, love life all the more. Don't detach yourself. Don't fall into depression. Don't despair. Now, we were all worried that this would be a year of bloodshed and hatred. We could remember a year ago. Even the Hebrew letters for last year spelled out the word tisneh, hatred. But we were wrong. It was the year when hatred was defeated. There were soldiers and there was war. But now we are instruments marching in a common band. Nuclear bombs have been turned into fountain pens. Jews are returning as welcome guests to Spain 500 years after the expulsion, and Israelis and Arabs will sit down to talk peace. One doesn't have to be looking at all of this, even from a distance, to sense the growing harmony. Where's our globe right now? It's over there. Let's pass it toward the middle. Then I'll ask, Robert Levine is playing Atlas today, to carry it to the front and allow someone in the middle of each row to touch it, representing all of those who haven't had the chance. You'll have the chance afterwards. Isn't it funny, though, looking at that globe, how it looks like the final mem in the word shalom? In a real way, we've all touched hands here today. There's a unity in this room, a feeling of common destiny, one that we must carry with us into the new year. We must throw off our self-pity and our fear, and like Job, rise up from the ashes, in spite of our troubles, because of our troubles. We can bring holiness to the world. It is here around us, if only we would be attentive to it. God is in distant space, And God is in our very own heartbeat. God is in the love we share and in the words we pray. As the song concludes, God is watching us from a distance. And then again, maybe, just maybe, not from such a distance at all.